And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
And welcome to episode 14 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, the AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Jeffrey. With me today is Chris. Chris, how you doing, man?
We're salty. Let's just get that out of the way.
Yeah, we are. We're just laying it all out in the beginning. You may actually want to skip this episode, honestly. Because we kind of wish we did.
We'll try to be as entertaining as we can regarding it, but just we don't have the most positive thoughts in this episode compared to possibly other sources of your podcasting or AEW Dynamite reviewing. And if you kind of prefer the more positive spin, you know, by all means, go for that. But just skip this episode most likely because we're going to be dunking on some stuff.
Yeah, or even better, just listen to episode 61 of the Strong Style Story podcast because because we talked about 10 hours worth of Wrestle Kingdom on that show.
We are but shameless shills. Let's get into this one, which did emanate from the Lander Center in South Haven, Mississippi, which is about 20 minutes away from the greater Memphis area. So
yeah,
stuff happened in that regard.
Yep, and I missed the first hour of the show, and from everything I'm hearing, I'm probably the better for it.
Here's what I'll say. We did start the night itself with a match as per usual, in which it was the team of Private Party of Isaiah Cassidy and Mark Quinn against Hangman Adam Page and Kenny Omega, where the match itself did play into, hey, is Hangman in good terms with the Elite guys at this point? He's been trying to stay away from them. Is there miscommunication? So on and so forth. The match itself
has he
was
been drinking?
Okay.
I mean, oh my God.
No,
yeah.
He was not drinking during the match by any means. All business in that regard, thankfully. With them, though, Private Party had some nice spots in which they got the show out a little bit. There was a certain point where I believe Kenny Omega caught a kick from, I want to say it was Isaiac, from Mark Quinn, threw him backwards into like a overhead Pele kick in a Hangman Page, showing they don't have the best chemistry, a little bit of miscommunication there and then, with a bit of a close fall. Kenny Omega definitely took one of the better gin and juices that I've seen out of Private Party.
Nice.
The bump, well done in that regard. Good close sequences. Private Party got to show out a little bit compared to their previous efforts, and it was nice in that regard, but eventually a combination of a buckshot envy trigger at the same time to Quinn, actually, like, that looked surprisingly good. That hits, and then Kenny Omega hits One Winged Angel for the victory on that. But then immediately after that, we have a backstage segment in which Pac is beating the shit out of Michael Nakazawa again. Has him in the brutalizer, and the whole gist of it is, give me my rubber match or more of this stuff is going to happen. Omega goes running backstage to, I guess, go check on his friend. Meanwhile, Adam Page does go into the crowd, even has a set of happy beers, as Tony Schiavone called it, with a member of the audience there. So the drinking, he at least waited until after the match to do that. For me in particular, I was able to see the entirety of the show this roundabout because I decided to actually find a Fight TV stream somewhere out there in the realms of the internet because I could not do the picture-in-picture stuff with the regular TNT watching as it's been the past few weeks. I like to say that I'm better for it, but even I'm not so this week. but I mean, from I would say that what was egregious, however, was what we got after the commercial break, which was the match that we had to delay a week because the powers that be couldn't figure out the booking circumstances. So we get it this week around, in which it is Riho defending the AEW Women's World Championship against Chris Statlander. Now, on paper, and without, and just trying to do wrestling as simply as you can, you would think that this would be match of the night. Fortunately, not so much the case. In the earlier portions of the match, it looks like we were going into some really good places and nice little sequences between the two girls in question, which included a Tiger Fang kick from Riho that was blocked, and Statlander pretty much picked her up from that position, went into a TKO that got reversed into an arm drag that eventually led into a sequence there that got a Total War backbreaker for a close two cover, and just... It's one of those things, like, we had some nice spots, a bridging Northern Light Superplex from Riho where it didn't happen, Shotei Superplex, you know, just a lot of good stuff happening, but then you have Awesome Kong and Melanie Cruz making their way down into the ramp shortly after this, and that's when you kind of knew, oh god, here we go again. It should be mentioned, I guess, prior to all this, that Brandi Rhodes did jump in on commentary and was just very lackadaisical at it. In all ways, shapes, and forms, and just, if anything, it detracted from the match, which was not a good sign. But then you have all this stuff with interference happening, where they are trying to screw Statlander over at first. That doesn't work. Riho dives onto the lot of them because, quite frankly, she's not having them, you know, interfere in her match, let alone, you know, make the one easier for her, because Riho don't play like that. And then the weirdest thing happens, in which we have another mystery indie person show up. Excalibur identifies it on commentary again. This time it's Dr. Luther, who apparently is an old friend of Chris Jericho's. Did deathmatch stuff for years and years, and I guess he is the bald-headed guy that's been in the Nightmare Collective vignettes over the past few weeks there. Just... fuckery all throughout this match.
I have never heard of Dr. Luther.
Again, that's the thing. I don't think it's a very niche market as it is, and even in that niche market of that matches, I'm not sure if all that many people have.
Where did he work? Did he work War? Did he work FMW?
Yeah, I didn't have the time to research it properly because we were watching this episode for the most part.
Oh yes, Len Olson, semi-retired professional wrestler known by the names Dr. Luther and Lenny St. Clair. Olson is known for his appearances in Japan for FMW, War, and IWA Japan in the 1990s. And he's from Calgary. Alberta, Canada.
The semi-retired part makes sense as to why we haven't seen much of him recently then. Okay, so there is that. One thing I will give props to, there was a really cool spot near the end of the match in which Statlander did have Riho in a military press, went to go basically toss her, and then Riho reversed it into a crucifix driver, which very close fall out of that. That was nice. Oh, nice. But then problem was Statlander goes for the Big Bang Theory at the end there. Kong trips her up. Riho ends up basically falling onto her, and that's how we get the three count, and then we get Nightmare Collective attacking pretty much everybody in the ring. Hikaru Shida gets in there, and then eventually it's, you know, Big Swole and Sunny Kiss coming in and making the rescue as well, too, to just even the odds in terms of the, amount of women to men, ratio altogether. And just, what an absolute mess. Like, this is a match that was as clear of a slam dunk as you could get on free television to just let two people go out there for 15 minutes and just have a good wrestling match, and they decided to do everything but that. It's unfortunate because Riho and Statlander worked with what they had and tried to make the most of it, but just Brandi Rhodes ruins everything. That's my takeaway from it.
Yeah, everything I'm hearing, I'm infuriated by this, and I didn't even see the match.
Yeah, just, but then after that, we get a quick sort of recap on the Kip Sabian Penelope Ford thing and them attacking Joy Janela last week around. Doesn't go beyond just, I guess, quick hype for the two of them. Somebody from Shinedown's in the front row. They decide to highlight that.
Oh my god. Shinedown.
Unless they're playing Old Master to the ring, I'm not interested.
Yeah,
That's all I'm
seriously,
going
who
to say on the
care?
matter.
Seriously, I don't care. I don't care about fucking Shinedown cover. Yeah, exactly. Unless they're playing the cover of Lynyrd Skynyrd's Simple Man to get us Mance Warner in the ring. I don't get. Yeah, they could stay in the 2000s, you know.
Yeah, there we go.
We're in 2020 now. They can stay in the 2000s.
Yeah, so after that, Chris Daniels does go out to his entrance. They kind of recap on commentary that he's sort of suffering through the yips at this point since the botched Arabian press, which, okay, I like that they're playing into that a little bit more and giving him this stuff, giving him something to work with that isn't just I'm a part of SCU and my two friends are the tag champions, kind of thing. But this match with Guevara, it was okay. I feel that giving, I guess, Guevara more of, this was more of a showcase for Guevara than anything, while still kind of building the story that Chris Daniels is trying to work for the Yips. I don't get, though, having Pentagon come out and mock him, basically saying, hey, do the moonsault again. I want to see if you can do it. I'm like, okay, that's good follow-up on what they were doing months prior, but then to have Guevara capitalize on that and win, but then have the Dark Order immediately come after that on a whole join us or else we'll beat you up, the second of three of those segments that we're
Oh my
apparently getting
Jesus
on the show.
Christ. Are you
And
serious?
just the worst part of this is that if you had inserted this even last week, to a certain extent, or waited until next week to do it, fine. But when you already have a segment on your show advertised with this purpose, which is will Jon Moxley join the Inner Circle or not, and then you don't throw two more of these, it's just it's overkill, man, and it's not the good kind at that. It makes you look like amateur hour.
Yeah, does it look? Does anybody? Do they have like a continuity guy person working AEW? Because there just doesn't seem to be one, you know?
You're being much kinder. I thought to myself, did they hire Vince Russo all of a sudden and none of us know about it?
Oh God, yeah,
Just.
this seems like a very Vince Russo show so far. And yeah, at this point, remember what we said when we were really high on the Dark Order? We were like, God, they're gonna find a way to fuck this up. Well, guess what?
It's really unfortunate because, again, this isn't on the performers. They're doing whatever it is they've got to do with what they're given at this point in terms of trying to make this stuff work. And I'll say this, I like the idea of the Southern California guys being together to team up against the Dark Order kinds, and I guess we'll see something akin to that come Revolution. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case anyway.
Oh Jesus,
But
it's gonna be SCU and the Dark Order for the tag belts at C2E2, isn't it?
it could be. I wouldn't be surprised
Jesus
if that is the
Christ.
case. I wouldn't be surprised either if they decide to go with like a 10-man tag of some sort for that either. So it's a wait and see approach on that. But just the problem with it is that making this like the segment, the second of three of these kinds of segments, it just doesn't do the performers a service in any way, shape, or form here. Honestly, I would even think that running something like that and maybe AEW Dark and using that as a way of building to something in next week's Dynamite would work a little better, but
Well,
it's done,
it's like,
and it just kind of buries the concept, unfortunately.
yeah, I mean, you can use Dark for that, and you know, like, remember how WCW used to have, like, it was like Saturday Night had like its own angles going on,
Yeah.
between, you know, Saturday Night Worldwide, even Prime, which shout out to Peter Winson of Greetings from Allentown, without whom I never would have known of the existence of WCW Prime. Because that was such a niche D show on like a channel that I never heard of. So,
Yeah, no kidding, Rick.
it was totally in its own universe. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah. So at this point, I think when I tuned in, I saw Daniels walking off and or and stuff, and the SCU walking off. So. At this point, I tune in because I had some work shit going on, so I didn't get home till late. And then, yeah, and then I see the Lucha Brothers, and I get a little excited because, of course, you know, my great love of Pentagon Jr. is pretty well known. And then I see who they're up against, and they're up against Cody and Dustin, and I already know how this is going to go. And I was 100% correct.
Yes, indeed you were.
You know, we could talk about all this conspiracy mongering of why, you know, the Lucha Bros aren't going to get, you know, the proper due respect and push that they really should. And let's face it, marketing that they really should. Because I think we could all agree they are, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about how Pentagon and Phoenix are like the two most marketable people that they have on that roster. Or two of them, I should say.
Yeah, but, two of them. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but you know, there's nothing that can, you know, with conspiracy theories and all that, and Visa money and all that, that we can't just put down to good old fashioned, good old boy networks, if you know what I mean.
Nepotism.
I was gonna go a couple less syllables than that. It starts with an R, but definitely an ism, but. Anyway, on that note, decent match, but again, I knew where this was going. And, you know, again, once again, the absolute insistence on making Penta and Phoenix as the, you know, evil foreign heels in this promotion is kind of a little sickening, to be honest.
True. And then
considering that both these guys... We're on, we're on weekly American television for a lot longer than most of the roster, you know.
They were better hyped and advertised and marketed during that time too. For
they were all over the ads for that. I mean, for a while at work, my work computer background was Pentagon from those season two ads, you know.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where. For as much as went wrong with Lucha Underground in the latter stages of their existence, boy, did they do a lot of stuff right with a couple of these guys once they figured out their own formula, their mid-season one. So
yeah, I'm almost kind of missing Lucha Underground at this point.
There's certain people who don't because contract situations were shit in that.
As a wrestling TV show, I kind of miss it, you know. That's so, what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fair enough assessment to make. So, anyways, from that, do have Tony Schiavone coming into the center of the ring, going, "Hey, how about that whole MJF thing?" And then R. Anderson basically cutting the most scathing promo I've seen on MJF by far, going, "It's like." Who is this MJF guy anyway? Who does he think he is? Did somebody die and make him God? Because I certainly didn't see that coming. And just basically, hey, Cody wants the match, but we're going to talk this out because we're smart, I guess is what I got out of it. So, hey, next week don't answer it. But then, speaking of the devil itself, we get another 10 minutes of MJF wasting our times.
Oh, Jesus. This was fucking awful.
I feel bad for DDP having to be, you know, at his current age. And for Butcher and the Blade as well, because we know at this point they're just hired goons for MJF. Yeah. And at least they have made that relationship clearer now compared to a couple weeks back. But... You know, DDP having to go through like two awkward diamond cutters, Wardlow not doing anything, yet again, a large man appearing and not doing squat in a MJF segment, and then MJF being MJF. Just that's 10 minutes that could have gone elsewhere. Anyways, we're moving on.
That segment is. Yeah, that segment was fucking awful, and I usually love DDP, and I was just like, I was just cringing the whole fucking time, you know? And, you know, again, I mean, how are you going to make, you know, Wardlow this large man appears when DDP is clearly at least 2 inches taller than Wardlow, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if Wardlow was actually jacked like, you know, I don't know, Katsuya Kitamiya. I could buy it, you know? If he's absolutely jacked like that. But Wardlow is not absolutely jacked like that from what we've seen so far.
And it's just one of those circumstances where I feel that they want to set up some big stuff for him down the line, but I feel they're setting him up for failure to begin with if they're going this route of, oh, him and Cody are going to get on the cage for his debut and so on and so forth. It's just, it feels like certain threads, unless we're proven otherwise at this point, it feels like a lot of lose-lose situation for a lot of the newer guys, yet the established guys are just, well, they're, you know, doing whatever. They're getting their checks.
Yeah, well, and plus, okay, so let's talk about the other thing is that now we have another situation where, we'll give you our answer next week. Oh, fuck off. You know? just seriously, fuck off with this shit, you know? I mean, I understand why they didn't do the Jericho thing last week, because Jericho wasn't there, because he had gone to
Tokyo Japan a day earlier or something.
Yeah, he had gone to Japan earlier. But, you know, it's just, God, there's like...
Yes, you have all the guys in the building. Why not just get it the fuck done with at that point?
I mean, yeah. You know, when you compare this to, like, oh, I don't know, say, Jon Moxley and Minoru Suzuki, you know? Sorry to harp on that, even though we just did that for, like, 2 hours on our other show, but, you know.
We're dying on the hill how great this is. Plain and simple.
You know what? I'm going to die on the hill of after the 3 days of Wrestle Kingdom and New Year Dash. I think I even told you before the show even started. I was just like, you know what? I don't even know if I'm going to be into AEW today. And
yeah, it's one of the circumstances where I think a lot of people who are still asking for this partnership should take a look at what Wrestle Kingdom did over the weekend with New Year's Dash included, and take a look at what AEW's been providing the last 2 weeks and just realize that one company needs the other way more than the other needs the initial company kind of thing, if you ask me.
Well, here, you know, on that note, can we sidestep for like 2 seconds, because I know that we talked about this at length on Strong Style Story, but in case people don't listen to this, to that show, which you really should, you know, there's been more talk from, you know, the Elite basically nuh-uhing the whole thing with, you know, the New Japan, co-involvement. And it's like, you know, Jesus Christ, you have your promotions champion breaking character, basically saying, you know, drop the egos, drop the hurt feelings, let's do biz, you know.
Yeah,
and here I was like, oh my God! Again, we've made this point several times. Moxley wants to play. Moxley is playing ball. I mean,
yeah, and Jericho are playing ball willingly with them. It's a situation where even for Jericho, who is as big of a mark for himself as any, and given his accomplishments, I don't exactly blame him. He's more of a mark for the money that he can make out of this. And he knows that it's good business to do what he's been doing.
Yeah, and plus, he has a modicum of respect for what goes on in Japan, you know.
Yeah.
You know, as much as you know, even though, you know, he was a disastrous super lagger, but let's face it, he had a lot of respect for war, you know, that helped break him. So, you know.
Yeah, for sure. He's definitely sort of giving back in his own way and working with guys that he's never worked with during his time there in New Japan, which is exciting. I'll say this, though, just to get us back into topic, though, because at the very least, the final two things that we did have on the show were good. Like, we both personally liked them considerably, where we had the main event match of the evening, which was Jurassic Express, which is Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Marcus Stunt against the Gentleman's Club. Chuck Taylor, Orange Cassidy, and Trent Beretta. Or just Trent, I guess, depending on which going you are going about this. But just, that was a super fun bit. I heard that TNT decided to put in a commercial again, mistimed.
Oh, yeah.
Some place in which they shouldn't have.
It was a full commercial. So, I mean, yeah, it wasn't even split screen. It was a full commercial. I was like, you sons of bitches. We finally have a decent match that we want to see.
Yeah.
And this is what you do.
And I saw it through the Fight TV feed, and I was glad to do so because seeing this match from beginning to end, very good stuff from all six guys, six young guys that don't have the amount of, you know, exposure that a lot of the established EVPs and certain characters have had, just showing out accordingly. Some really kind of fun stuff to establish both teams, the relationships in question, and just more stuff like that, man, where the young guys get to show out a little bit and get their profiles up in the process of it. So the end did see Jurassic Express picking up the victory with Jungle Boy getting a basically your Hurricane Rana with the pinfall onto it. We get some hype for next week's Bash at the Beach show, which is going to include, I guess, DDP and Trios action with QT Marshall and Dustin Rhodes against the MJF Butcher and the Blade tandem. So we have at least that match already confirmed.
I don't predict great things from that match, but I also saw that they're also advertised Chris Statlander and Hikaru Shida against Awesome Kong and Melanie Cruz.
Yes, so, that one's advertised, which we'll see how that goes. From there, though,
pump the brakes for a second. So one thing, though, is that they talk about this tribute to Memphis, and it looks like that they're going to show that on Dark instead.
Yes, they are. All they did was just pan to the audience.
Holy shit. I had not realized that was Lanny Poffo until they put the Chiron up. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just, and we'll see that, I guess, on Dark this week, is to see what they did for that specifically and such.
assuming we remember to watch Dark, because we didn't this week, and at this point, we're not going to.
It's fine. But from there, though, it is our big segment, the one that's been promised to us for the past, you know, 2 weeks now, of Jon Moxley's answer of whether he will join the Inner Circle or not. Outside of things such as Jericho basically saying he would kick Elvis Presley's ass if he was still alive, and Sammy Guevara shooting his shot with Salma Hayek, which, good on you, kid. Do what you gotta do. Moxley comes in, initially cuts the promo, kind of indicating that he's not going to join it, but then he says, yes, I will. Reveals himself with an Inner Circle shirt at that, talks about running roughshod on everybody, and that doing it with the Inner Circle would be the thing to do. They pop open the bubbly accordingly. They celebrate for a good 5 minutes there. And at this point, we know they're just sort of buying time, though I will give props to one particular area in which Moxley is looking at the camera itself, talking about the stuff just as he talks loudly to cameras, which is a thing he does now. And he kind of gives this nice little wink there, indicating that, uh-oh, something's up. This isn't all we're going to get. And then eventually it's a lol, JK, I was never going to join you to begin with. If I want your title, drops Jericho, drops Guevara, gets out of Dodge. Good segment, but they definitely dragged it a little bit just because TV time at this point, which makes you think somebody, I think, mistimed this whole thing as well as to, like, you know, you could have just put like two or three of those minutes into the match that you just had beforehand and, you know, not got it into commercial and just, I don't know.
It was a good segment, but at this point it was too little too late, and it was too little too late to save the show. And as you mentioned, there were like two other of these join us or die segments, you know, and it's like, good Lord, you know?
Yeah, it's just, it's very unfortunate that an episode that did have a little bit of promise going into it, and what we get is arguably,
is this
in an overall perspective, in an overall perspective, it might just be the worst episode of Dynamite we've seen thus far.
Yeah, I mean, luckily I missed the first hour. I think I would have been absolutely, I think if I would have actually seen that Chris Statlander versus Riho match, I would have been absolutely fucking furious.
I was just irritated.
But then, you know, I got to see, you know, once again the hack job that they're doing with, you know, someone who I feel, again, is a top three wrestler in the entire damn world. And this is what they're doing with them, and it's like, oh, yay, you know.
Yeah, just it's unfortunate. We're not trying to be like negative Nancy's about this and saying that, oh, you know, AEW sucks and blah 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 for those who might be newer to this.
Yeah, but this episode certainly
don't
did
get us wrong.
Suck.
We want this to succeed, but this episode was not over from an overall perspective. This was not a good episode for them. I can only hope that next week it's, yeah.
Right, and when you consider that, you know, again, we had just experienced, you know, the 3 days of Wrestle Kingdom and New Year Dash, and, you know, where there was a whole gamut of emotions going into it, you know, everything from, you know, a six-year-long storyline being resolved to the absolute legend that was Jushin Liger calling time. You know, just, you know, we had just such a gamut, you know, and again, the segment with Jericho and Moxie was fine, but boy, did this pale to both segments of Moxley and Suzuki that we got this weekend? Yeah, it kind of did, you know?
Mm.
I mean, I understand it's two different things. You know, this is American TV versus, you know, how Japan does things, but which one gets you more pumped, you know?
Yeah, and I understand that with North American television, serial television at that, that it's a situation where if you're expecting clean finishes every single week, that's an unrealistic thing to expect, and I get that. But just there is a difference between trying to tell cohesive stories to just kind of flying by the seat of your pants, and this felt very much like an episode where they were flying by the seat of their pants, and it did not work as well.
I understand that, yes, you know, short matches, fuck finishes, you know, storyline advancement, yes, that's the order of the day, but, you know, at least, you know, pretend that you have a plan. This just seems, we're 14 weeks into TV, and it already seems like, I mean, I guess 15 if you want to count the Christmas week that they didn't run a show. But,
yeah,
you know, that we're at the point now where it just seems like that they're just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think that's a real, and considering, you know, all the drama we've talked about with, you know, across like two different show, you know, across two different, you know, podcast brands, you know, there seems to be some office conflict now about New Japan. You know, between, you know, the Elite and, you know, Moxley, Jericho, Tony Khan. It just like, your company is a year old, you've had TV for 14 weeks, and you already seem like you don't know what the fuck you're doing, you know?
Yeah, it's a situation where you're still in that learning phase as a company, especially now that you're on TV every single week. On the same vein, though, I do think that there's certain things that you still need to figure out as a team, as your own brand, just as an identity. And the biggest problem, I would say, is you come in with the amount of hype that you do, and you talk about being an alternative to what's within current WWE programming, but then you make these displays that make WWE almost seem like, again, you're not so much acting like an alternative. You're more the norm that a lot of people have gotten used to in North American pro wrestling, and that's not a good sign.
Well, right. That's why I said that before. It's like you don't become an alternative to WWE by mimicking the WWE. It's like it seems like at this point the only differences between AEW and the WWE, their two products at this point are experience and Saudi Arabian blood money. You know, those seem to be the only two differences between AEW and WWE so far in 2020, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And really the last couple of weeks of 2019 too. So, I don't know. I mean, I joked with you earlier, is like, is this going to finally be the week we tap out? You know? But, you know, again, you know, coming off of this weekend, and then, you know, meanwhile, WWE is promising the return of the Time Splitters, which, hey, New Japan fans here are going to be like, oh, shit, you know?
Yeah. Just one of those deals, man, where I'll say this, like, I don't want to do pros and cons this week just because I feel the episode's mostly been kind of a wash.
Yeah, there's no,
Uh,
yeah,
but I'll
there's
say,
no, there's no point.
yeah, but I'll say this, like, we're hoping from a perspective that next week's episode, with them being in Miami and such, that they just go through and outright deliver on the solid episode, and that they, figure certain things out, that the segments hit the way that they should hit, and just try to do right by everybody involved. Because at this point, it's that situation where you want this stuff to succeed. You want an alternative on stuff to watch on Wednesdays compared to what's been there all along. And you have the right pieces to do that with. It's just a matter of standing and delivering with those pieces.
Yeah, I mean, it's like sometimes you get a puzzle piece and it may not, and you think it should fit, it looks like it should fit, and you just can't quite get it in. You don't take a fucking hammer and just bash on it until it fits, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. We're 14 weeks in and the rot's setting in. And I mean, I remember, this is like, it sounds like we're talking about, like, WCW Thunder. Shout out to our boys, Dave and Lee. But
Yep.
it's just like we really shouldn't have been to this point already, I don't think, with everything going in. But so far, the stories of 2020, as far as AEW goes, seems to be the Elite's drama with New Japan. And the last few weeks of TV have not been great. In fact, this one was just actively bad. So
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, they still have time to pull this up, but boy, I don't know. I mean, we have the Bash at the Beach show in Miami. We get the Jericho Cruise the week after, and then where are they? They're in Ohio the next week. Boy,
Yes.
they're just jumping around, aren't they?
Yep, definitely so. But I mean, listen, here's the thing. Hopefully next week we can talk about how much better of an episode this was compared to this week around. But I guess with that said, we might as well just go into plugs at this point, right?
All right. Well, I guess since you kind of took the lead on this show, I'll take the plugs first. You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel, and then there is also my other podcast, Busting Balls, SoundCloud.com/busting-balls.
Yep, there you go. Perfect. Then for me, you can find me over on good old Twitter as well as Instagram, over at Brazilian Fury. That is Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. You can also obviously check out the Pro Wrestling Only Network for more of these fantastic shows, like our own Strong Style Story, Dave and Lee's WCW Thunder Rewatch and Days of Thunder, Greetings from Allentown, Through the Years, and a whole lot more. You can also be on the lookout over the next couple of days over on the Steel Cage Podcast Network, in which I'm going to be talking with our friend of the show, Captain Jet Heartless, about Wrestle Kingdom and what it was in the annual Wrestle Kingdom edition of Captain Jack's Armbar Emporium over there. So be on the lookout for that coming during the course of the weekend, I believe.
Hey Jack, how you doing?
Yep. And with that said, that about wraps it up for us. If you did manage to stick with us through this episode, thank you. We appreciate it, and hopefully we're a lot more positive about this next week.
Yeah, sometimes you just get a really bad episode of wrestling television, and we're here to we just got we got we gotta shoot straight. We just gotta keep it 100, and this episode sucked. Hopefully next week won't.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.